Wouldn't it be nice if money just rained down like that? So this weekend I did a wedding up in Maple Grove, and as I was driving through traffic on Friday, I was cutting through Edina, and at that time of day, I was surprised how many private limo cars that I saw on the road. A number, you know, you can usually spot them because they're an all-black SUV or town car or something that starts with LM, and it kind of makes you wonder who's in it. And as I'm sitting in traffic and I'm watching these limo cars kind of weave around and get through, I thought, you know, it must be nice to have the kind of money that you could just pay somebody to drive you through rush hour traffic. I mean, wouldn't that be nice? You can go ahead and do some work, check some emails on your phone, play some games, I don't know. But I started to think about it, and I thought, you know, there are some benefits to not being rich, right? There are some benefits to being poor. For instance, so it had me thinking about who was in those vehicles, and I started thinking about athletes, right? You might wonder if it's maybe a football player that's in the car or something like that, or a private athlete, or a Timberwolf living in Edina. And it brought up my mind that the fact that Adrian Peterson used to live in Edina. And as you may have heard in the news recently, that the Star Tribune article, according to the Star Tribune article, Crown Bank here in Minneapolis is suing Adrian Peterson for $600,000 because he defaulted on a personal loan. And it had me kind of scratching my head because I thought, man, this guy's made so much money. How can he, like, what's going on that he can't afford to pay back $600,000? I don't even know how many millions of dollars he was making at the time a year. But apparently, Adrian Peterson took out a $2.4 million loan in May of 2016 and defaulted on it in October of that same year. Now, in his defense, I guess you could say in 2016, Adrian Peterson played, what, 3 games for the Vikings? And so maybe he was anticipating that he'd earn some bonuses to pay off that money. But over the course of his career, he's made over $96 million. $96 million. And he's struggling to pay off a $600,000 loan. And you would think with all that kind of wealth, there wouldn't be any sort of money problems, right? So I was thinking about it this week, and I thought, you know what, there are some real advantages to being poor. For instance, your children get to learn the value of a hard work ethic, and all you have to do is bribe them with an award from McDonald's, right? Or in my household, it's just like a dum-dum lollipop, and they're like, oh yeah, I'll clean my room. For candy? Yeah, I'll clean my room. Right? So there's some advantages to being poor. This is one that my wife has taught me. An advantage to being poor is the fact that you can park your minivan right next to a brand new BMW, and your vehicle's not the one that gets broken into. All right? Our apologies to the vehicle that was broken into. We know nothing about it, but our van went by unscathed. I think it's something about seeing the McDonald's wrappers on the floor that makes it, they're bringing a McDonald's, there's nothing in this vehicle to take, all right? There's some advantages to being poor when you think about the fact that your family and friends stop asking you for money when every time they do, you pay them in Monopoly bills, all right? So if you've got family, like a brother-in-law, sister-in-law that's always asking for a little extra cash, just start paying them in Monopoly bills, they're going to go away. So there's some advantages. But this morning, as we kick off this new series called Be Rich, I want to talk a little bit about some side effects of being of wealth, okay? In this new series, Be Rich, it's not an idea of how to get rich quickly. It's not an idea of how we can make more money. Really, most of us probably would not say that we're rich. Okay, so most people probably wouldn't say that they're rich, and yet we all know somebody that we think is, right? So I'm not going to ask how many of you are rich, but I'm going to ask how many people know someone who is rich. Okay? There are a few people, so not as many as I thought might know somebody. So most of us know somebody who might be rich. But in just in case we ever were to become rich, wouldn't it be nice to know how to be rich now so that if God ever blesses us with the good fortune of being rich later, we could do so accordingly? So the key idea of this message series is it's not about what you have, it's what you do with what you have. It's not about what you have, it's what you do with what God gives you. And so let's consider for a moment, since we're probably not rich here today, but let's consider for a moment how being rich might impact our life. As I mentioned before, wealth impacts your well-being. If you're following along in the message notes today, that's kind of our first fill in the blank. Wealth impacts your well-being. And what do I mean by this? Well, for one, rich people often live in denial. Rich people often live in denial. According to a 2011 Gallup survey, Americans said they would need to earn a median household income of $150,000 a year in order to consider themselves rich. And so most of America says, you know what, if you're making $150,000 a year, you're probably rich. This is three times the median annual household income of $50,000 a year. So if you're wondering where do you compare to the rest of the median household income is $50,000. For those earning below $50,000 a year, their number would be $100,000. They would say, hey, you know what? If you're making $100,000, you're rich. For those that are at or a little bit above that level, they typically would say $200,000. And for those who make like $75,000 a year, the answer would be $250,000 to consider themselves rich. So in other words, we always, that number keeps moving. The more money you have, the more money you think it needs to, you need to have in order to consider yourself rich. What if we thought about it in terms of savings? How much money would you have to put in the bank in order to consider yourself rich? Well, that answer used to be $1 million. It used to be, hey, you know what? If we have $1 million in the bank between all of our assets, land, pension, savings, whatever, that we would consider ourselves rich. But according to a recent Charles Schwab survey, the number is now $2.4 million. So man, even when I was working towards my retirement goals, I guess maybe I set my retirement goals too low, I'm still gonna end up being poor even in my retirement. So nobody is rich, and yet we all know somebody who is. So if you don't know you're rich, then how is it that you're gonna know how to act like you're rich? How is it that we'll know how to act if we're rich? Well, the truth is, you are richer than you think. You are richer than you think. We'll say more about this next week and as we continue our series, but in fact, according to a global rich list that's studying how much people make worldwide, if you earn an income of $32,400 a year, that is enough to place you in the top 1% of wage earners worldwide. $32,000 a year puts you in the top 1% of wage earners worldwide. So now I probably have told a majority of you that you are a lot wealthier than you realized. You are now in the top 1% worldwide. So if that's true, then most of us who probably wouldn't exactly say we're rich, in truth, really aren't we? We have been blessed, we have all kinds of wonderful things that we enjoy because of where we live. We might not be rich compared to our neighbors, but if we think about it in terms of the amount of wealth that God has entrusted to us, we're a lot richer than we realize. So the other side effect is the fact that, one, we all live in denial of being rich or not. The second side effect is the fact that rich people often become discontent. What do I mean by this? Well, we live with a constant quest for more, don't we? And it seems like the accumulation, this quest, is just like an appetite. The more we feed it, the more we acquire, the more we want, right? I've got, you know, I went duck hunting this weekend, and I've got two shotguns, but the one shotgun wasn't quite performing as well. And so what am I thinking? I need a new shotgun, because my other one, really, I just need to clean it. It'll probably work just fine. But we think, you know, man, we've got to feed this appetite. We're always after more. We accumulate stuff upon stuff. In fact, sometimes we have so much stuff that we're willing to pay somebody else to store our stuff so that we can do what? So we can buy more stuff, all right? And so the cycle continues. And our accumulation of stuff is like this appetite. The more we feed it, the more we grow. And the more we have, the more we want. In fact, rich people do strange things. Poor people in other parts of the world don't do this, but rich people in America, we have this strange habit. We like to upgrade things, right? As soon as that new phone comes out, we think, well, oh man, I gotta get this new phone because this one's gonna be newer and it's gonna be faster. Now, if you have an Apple iPhone, there's a whole theory about how Apple degrades your current cell phones that you have to upgrade. But we do these strange things, like we take stuff that works, a perfectly good TV, and we give it to somebody else, like our brother-in-law, so they stop asking us for money, and then we go to the store and we buy a new TV to replace the one that we just got rid of. We also do, rich people do strange things. We can stand in a closet full of clothes and we can say what? I don't have anything to wear. So you have that same problem I have, right? We have so much stuff, we don't know what to do with our stuff, and we don't always know which stuff we should put on, which, So enough beating up on rich people and making fun of ourselves and the silly things we do. Our key text for this series comes from 1 Timothy chapter 6. And if you have your Bibles with you today, and you want to open up and put a bookmark in here, we're going to come back to this chapter of Scripture each week. And we're going to take it verse by verse as we look at some of the Apostle Paul's instructions for Timothy and the church in Ephesus. And so this morning I want us to look at verse 17, which says this: command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for your enjoyment. So what do I want you to take away from this text today? Instead of, you know, Pastor Gordon beat up on me a little bit, made fun of me because I'm richer than I think, all right? The first thing I want you to take away from this is that misplaced hope causes the rich to act poor. Misplaced hope causes the rich to act poor. Ephesus is a thriving community. It's kind of a center in its area. And the church in Ephesus likely had a number of people who had wealthy means. Paul encourages Timothy to warn these members against the dangers of wealth. That is, that not that being rich is a bad thing, however, when you have lots of money, when you have lots of wealth, it's easy to place your trust in your wealth and your own abilities than it is to trust in God. And so he knows that this could be a temptation for them, and so Paul's encouraging them to speak to those who are rich by this present world. Proverbs 18, verse 11 says that the wealth of the rich is their fortified city. They imagine it a wall too high to scale. This proverb encourages us not to put our trust in our wealth, because what happens when we place our trust in our wealth? We end up believing that there is a magic number that somehow, if we can accumulate this much stuff, this much money, if we could reach our goal, well, then we would be secure, right? If only we had reached this amount, if only we could build our walls a little bit higher, then we'll be secure. But let me ask you a question. How much money would you need in order to secure your future against all threats, all unimaginables that would happen? I want you to think about that for a moment. What would be your magic number? How much money would you need to be secure? Now, I'm going to do a little magic trick here. I know what number you're thinking of. I know how much money your goal is, and here's how I know it. The answer to that question, how much money do you need to feel secure, is more than you currently have, right? Was that right?
Yeah.
Your magic number was more than you currently have. The answer is always more than we currently have now. I could ask you, like, 3 years from now, when you're a little bit closer to that goal, and the answer is still going to be the same, more than you currently have. What happens when we misplace our hope is it causes the rich to act poor. When your wealth becomes your hope, you try to build taller walls. You try to store more into the bank. You try to put more grain in your bins, and you try to make yourself more secure. And you begin to hang on to things. The term here is you begin to hoard, right? You begin to collect stuff and hang on to things because you will never have enough. And whether you're hoarding money or stuff or things, you live with this. And then once you have all this stuff, you begin to live with this fear of losing it all, right? And so it's not a great lifestyle when we're thinking about it, and when our misplaced hope is in our wealth. In fact, which of the following statements causes more anxiety for you? I want you to think about this one. If I were to tell you there is no God, think about how much anxiety that creates. Or if I were to tell you that you have no money, your bank account is empty. Somebody broke in and they wiped you clean, right? Which question or which statement causes more anxiety? The way we answer this question really does cause us to ponder, have we misplaced our hope? Why is it that finding out we have no money creates as much anxiety as it does for us? The second thing I want you to take away from this text is that we are to trust the provider over the provision. To trust the provider over the provision. When your hope begins to migrate, then your wealth becomes your God. Your wealth becomes your God. When we begin to trust in the provision rather than the one who provides. Now imagine I ask you that same question I just asked you, but this time I want you to imagine that you're finding yourself on a hospital bed. And the diagnosis is not good. And the doctor just came in and told you that you might have days, if not hours, to live. Now, if I were to pose that question to you and say, there is no God, or you have no money, which one creates more anxiety? Now we view that question differently, don't we? So if we're going to trust God in the end, why not trust God now in the middle of our life? 1 Timothy 6:17 says, command those who are rich in this present world not to become arrogant, nor put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God. You see, our wealth is uncertain. We have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow. We cannot control what's going to happen to the things that we accumulate. You may have saved a lot of money in your pension for your retirement, but as you near the end of your career, say if you retired around the end of 2006, 2008, 2010, somewhere there, what happened to your pension? It drastically decreased. And suddenly your hopes and dreams that you had for your retirement look a lot differently than they had years previously. Your company downsizes as you near your retirement, and your years of service are cut short, impacting how much money you're going to be able to draw out of your pension, or the stock market crashes. While our wealth may be uncertain, there is somebody we can trust, and somebody who is certain. That is the God who richly provides. We can trust God's provision. Instead of being arrogant about the wealth that we have accumulated for ourselves, we are encouraged to be grateful for that which God has provided for us. You see, God has given us everything. God has given us our talents and our abilities, our strengths, as we talked about in our last series. And God is the source, not ourselves. God is the source of all that we have. What I love about this text is that Paul doesn't say that being rich is a bad thing, all right? So I don't want you to walk away today saying, oh, gee, Gordon was beating me up because I have more money than he does, and you know, but Gordon's trying to make me feel bad for being rich. No, that's not what this text is about. Paul says it's okay to be rich. It's okay to have wealth, but we want to do so with a proper perspective and understanding. Because with a proper perspective and understanding, then we can enjoy the wealth we have. We can live and enjoy it rather than feeling discontent or rather than living with a fear of losing it all. Instead of being rich and discontent, we can enjoy that which God has given us. So what is the secret to being, or you know, why not learn that secret to being rich well now? Proverbs 30, verses 7 through 9 says, two things I ask you, Lord. Do not refuse me before I die. Keep falsehood and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise, I may have too much and disown you and say, who is the Lord? Or I may become poor and steal and so dishonor the name of God. The author asks neither for riches nor wealth, but just enough for each day. The author of the Proverbs has learned to trust the provider over the provision. So don't put your hope in riches, but in the one who richly provides. If you forget everything else I say today, and that's okay if you do, just remember this one thing. Don't put your hope in riches, but in the one who richly provides. Because when you trust the provider over the provision, then we can enjoy the riches that God has given us. Then we can enjoy the riches that God has given us. If we recognize that we are truly rich, that we are truly blessed by God, then we can find enjoyment in this life. We can enjoy the things that God has given us. However, if we're only pursuing more, if our definition of what it means to be rich is based on a definition of greed, then we're never going to be satisfied. We're always going to be searching for more. Paul tells us to put our hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for your enjoyment. For your enjoyment. So it's okay to be wise with your money. It's okay to be rich. It's okay to live a rich life when we do so with a proper perspective. We don't need to be ashamed about wealth. When properly understood, we can view our riches as a gift from God and as a tool that we can use to invest and build in the work that God is doing, to build his kingdom here on earth. We can view our wealth as a blessing that we can share, rather than something we're hanging on to for security. When God gives a gift, God gives it with the hopes that you're going to enjoy it. As long as you're not putting your trust in that which was given to you, as long as you're not trusting your wealth, trusting the provision over the provider, and as long as you're not living a life of self-indulgence, it's okay to be rich, it's okay to be wealthy, but don't misplace your hope in your wealth. Don't put your hope in riches, but in the one who richly provides. Let us pray. God, we come to you today just recognizing that, yes, we indeed are richer than we realize. And God, you have been so good to us. You have blessed us with many comforts. And God, we have not always been grateful for that. So we take this moment to confess our hearts before you, to take a moment to be grateful for that which you have provided, and to ask for your help, Lord, that we may not misplace our hope in the things that we have accumulated and our wealth and our own sense of security, but may we continue to trust in you, the one who has provided all good things for us. And so God, help us to be rich well. Help us to live our lives wisely. And help us to honor you in everything we do, with our gifts, our times, our ability, everything. We give it to you in Jesus' name.